of the exhibits, unlike her. She places it more in context, like what sort of Jeff keeps bringing us back to, rightly so, that the justification, the legitimization of it being in a science museum is indirectly, she argues, telling us how to look at it, and also telling us how not to look at it, at least in public. You know, how we should not talk about it, how we can talk about it amongst our friends, but not in public. That are there implications to the fact that all we're saying is, as long as there's donor consent, it's respect and respectful treatment of cadavers, and it's educational, fine. I think her argument is that it's a very superficial or not very contextual critique of the exhibit. She does a great job. I'll tell you what pages. Pages like around 378 and 379. She's got a great discussion of all the other ways, all the more anthropological ways in which one can think about critiquing the Body Worlds exhibit. She says that if we stop at the question of informed consent and human dignity, we ignore questions of aesthetics, and she doesn't mean beauty. She means sort of forms of presentation. We ignore cultural inscriptions such as gender, and we ignore the consumer, the relationship between consumers and the bodies. All of these areas, she says, are moments that are open to critique, but that are closed off when we've said it's fine as long as we meet the human dignity angle. She talks here on 378, the abundance of conservative social messages, the authoritative voices in the wall quotations are all Western and male. There's more male plastinists than there are women. And in the same way when we talked about anatomy textbooks and the specimen, the male is taken as the standard. Women plastinists are isolated primarily for their reproductive function. There's also the ballerina. You know, we saw her. long-standing assumption that the male is the norm and the female... Yes, the penis appears as part of the normal body rather than as the male organ of reproduction. Talks about this sort of patriarchal perspective of exhibit to spectator. The idealization of bodily perfection reinforced on a metaphysical level, which I think also ties in a lot to some of the things we were talking about in these past weeks about sort of outward sort of bodily perfection or normalcy relating back to sort of a state of societal normalcy and stasis, the goodness, that the abnormal body is dangerous and takes us, you know, we have to sort of hide it. There's more athletes than there are brains, which makes sense in terms of its anatomy. We get another Nazi art analogy here. Pedagogical justification for showing something deemed distasteful. I'm talking about sort of fascist art in general. So, she says, are we suppressing this critical engagement? That we're not looking at the ideology behind the exhibit. She said there's nothing new in the display and artful refiguring of a human body. What is new, and where we should be critiquing, is the commercialism and the appropriation of somebody as some body. And I think that opens it up. It places Body Worlds in a larger context of other ways in which the body is being commodified in the early 21st century with black market organ markets. other, and sort of, that's sort of the classic example, but it helps to, you know, if we're talking about it being science and ideological debates, to use something like body worlds to say how much more it could be is a lesson I think we can take to other bioethics concerns. And hopefully my next slide is, no it's not, this idea of story of the person and story of the body. Because I think that embodiment, social construction of people, is something that is often forgotten. And putting it so front and center is part of the beauty of using this in an ethics context. Let's go Hila and then Steve.
If you want to advocate for the human being to be optimal,
sure.
I think in some cultures, some religions, such as religions, the way you treat the dead body is of utmost importance. Mm-hmm. And there are rules and traditions and so on and so forth. So I think the act of consent of a person donating themselves to the body world does not mean that you can do anything and everything with that body. There is still the responsibility, the societal responsibility, to continue to use that donation in a dignified way. And I think what bothers me the most is the fact that they are stripped of any all the formal life and being appropriated as property by the heavens, by giving them a different title, so giving them a different identity, and by signing his artistic signature is basically claiming ownership on something that you can never claim ownership on, because it's not preserving their I don't think it's preserving their dignity. It's just making them an artifact, an object. Like other objectifications of human bodies. In modern slavery, in the sense of prostitution, or any kind of objectification of women's bodies and so on. It's taking ownership on something that you can never really take ownership. And that's, for me, crosses the lines between preserving the human dignity and using the body for science and for education.
And the huge profits that he's making. Mm-hmm. It's not just ownership, it's profits too.
It's not even that for me. I mean, yes, it's an additional argument, but mm-hmm. it's just the claiming of ownership, of giving them a different a title, like an object.
Okay. Let's go Steve, and then Matthew, and Sheen.
Did you want to continue that line? Because I think I'm going to take it in a little bit of a different direction. So I didn't want to cut off any conversation on that. But I think she's hitting some really
important points. And
just a quick question to throw out. Is it ownership or is it authorship? Like a painter or a sculptor? Is his signature?
I think it's ownership. Because he names it. He identifies it. Give it a different identity. When you give, the act of giving names, or naming someone, is ascribing some characteristics or identity or value, or, well, I'm thinking about giving a name to a child. You put so much thought and intention and so on and so forth, and values and your tradition and things you want to commemorate, things you want to inspire in that child who is. In that, and it's all it's all concentrated in that act of naming a child. It's the same.
But children aren't owned.
No, but when you give a name, you try to give an identity in some sense. Of course, a parent cannot decide what the child will be, but you don't just give names. There's a lot of intention behind giving names. So. Giving them a title, it's changing their identity. Changing their identity in the sense that he's deciding what it is, It's different in another person than it was.
I had, like, when I was looking at some of the pictures I did, what most everybody does, is I did a Google image search for all these different displays that were mentioned, including the second one, the Body Works, Body Worlds, and then the Body exhibition. And I was looking at the pictures and thinking, you know, how ironic would it be if that person who's posed on this horse was petrified of horses their whole lives, or the person who's being posed as the ballerina was, you know, was the biggest klutz on the planet, or, and I kind of the similar thing of there's a, almost a, this wasn't my thought before this, but just the fact that these folks who are doing these exhibits are almost erasing the origin of who that person was, and then using their body for whatever intent they have. Now, some may be to learn to see how, you know, muscles and tendons and ligaments move, like that guy was showing in the picture, but almost a complete, that person ceases to be a person, they now are an object to be used for whether it's a good purpose or a bad purpose. But my thought, I was thinking before, is this whole idea of dignity, you know, it's tied to really the treatment. And you think of who would go and play a game of Ultimate Frisbee in front of the fountain at the 9/11 memorial, or who would think it was funny for folks to laugh and run and joke through a war memorial or something like that. And so, you know, people get upset when we do that, or to, if anyone has been to the Holocaust Museum in Washington, D.C., to go in there and, you know, to speak loudly in German or recite a, you know, Hitler's poem, but something that would be, that would, you know, show disrespect. And I think that somewhat dignity is tied to that, for me at least, is that, you know, not so much the loss of identity. If a person signs over and says, my body is used, that doctor made it very clear, I have no preconditions on how my body will be used. I trust my colleagues to take and use it to their... So in a sense, you know, if he ends up being, you know, portrayed, or his body is displayed in a way that had nothing to do with him as a person, I might not be that uncomfortable with that, but it's just the, to me, it's the idea of treatment and how you approach that, and so not so much an opposition to or a rejection of this whole process, but, you know, how it's employed and how it's treated. Is there that sense of that? And just one final little story is, 2007 was part of a training program to help military clergy become comfortable with handling dead bodies and things like that, and went through four or five different, what do they do after you die and they cut you up?
Autopsy.
Yes, by the Brooke Army Medical Center. And it wasn't a lot of fun, but it was interesting. But in our debriefs every day, you could see some folks were coping with the stress of it by cracking jokes, which, you know, I was uncomfortable, you know, but you learn, you grow, you're there for a purpose. But when they started cracking jokes about a certain individual, and he happened to be like a 400-pound super obese person, and there was jokes being cracked later, all I could think of was, how would his grandchildren feel, or how would his wife feel if they knew that people were talking about him this way? So I wasn't opposed to, or to me, there was no moral offense of him being used as an instrument for education, or display, or, you know, having complete medical, you know, people with no medical experience at all involved with, you know, the dissection of his body. But it was the manner in which people were reviewing him. It didn't seem to be with, it wasn't in the language we're talking here. His dignity was, to me, was being assaulted or neglected or demeaned. And I think that's, for me, some of the challenges, and some of this comes down to, is how do you approach it? What manner in which, what attitudes do people have? What's the purpose of the people displaying it?
I think, Sheena, did you want to get on this?
Yeah, actually, along both of your guys' slides, I think I really thought it was poignant when you said something about the loss of identity, and I remember the guy in the video talking about, you know, hey, if the families want these people back, there's 6 months, you can still recognize them, and just the flippant way in which he was discussing that really spoke to me, that the doctors who are working, are the people who are working on this, really don't seem to be viewing it as an individual human being. And also what you were saying about how I was sort of thinking the same thing, where, like, are these people athletes? It's not celebrating their life in any way. It's not like this fabulous athlete. They're putting him doing what he loved to do. It's, you know, your body happens to work well in this way, and you probably, you know, were bending your arm when we plasticized you, so it worked out. I think another thing that sort of was interesting to me was the fact that he's portraying himself as a doctor. And I guess is he a PhD or I think that's just heinous. I can't imagine why he's calling himself a doctor, and that sort of speaks to...
He's a performance artist, in many ways.
Agreed, but I don't think people are... If he's justifying it based on education and information, then if he's doing this as a performance artist piece...
Right.
It's not the type, yeah.
Yeah, which is exactly the point about copycats.
Yes.
If the thing is truly about science, there's no such thing as a copycat because it's anatomy.
And I think that also what was interesting is that, like, with the London Museum, at least, I don't know of the rest of them, but they have the majority of their bodies, they said, from that place, I can't remember the name of the country, but those people said that the majority of their bodies come from people who weren't claimed in 30 days. Mm-hmm. And under no circumstances does anyone think, oh, I'm going to die, and it's really sad that there's no one to love me, but in that case, it doesn't matter who I am.
It made me wonder how much money it would take to... That's what I was thinking. How much money does it take to claim a body mm-hmm. in that country?
Mm-hmm. That's exactly what I was thinking. Like, what if you just die and...
Yeah.
I don't know. So, those are all issues.
I want to go back to the dignity question and ask us to take a step back to try to isolate where are the values coming from that make the argument of the dignity of a deceased body, what is the value that should make us care about what happens to a deceased body?
You know, it manifestly doesn't matter, like, what you do with somebody's dead body to that person anymore because they're dead, you know what I mean? Like, they can't have an opinion on the matter. So, so say they don't know what happens before they die, and then they die. They don't know what they're going to do with their body, and then they die, and then X, Y, and Z happens, right? You know, it doesn't, you know, even if they have a soul or whatever, that no ethical things on their part were done. So I think the only implication that it has is for the families, for the loved ones, for society, for the religion, for all these other things. For it's like a reflective kind of thing. And actually, I agree with them in terms of the dignity thing, but it's a dignity for everyone else, I think. And frankly, I think a lot of this is, like, sadistic. I mean, there was, like, that point where he said, the second guy, people ask me, why don't we just do it in plastic? And he's like, well, because when other people come in, they say they don't really feel the same thing. It's like, well, you said it right there. They don't feel this, like, other thing. But what is that other thing? It's not science. They don't not feel science. You know, it's something else that they don't feel. They don't feel the macabre or whatever.
Okay.
Can you repeat your exact question? Sorry.
Because I'm not sure that where Hila and Steve were going would be a universal reaction. Yes.
So with the dignity thing, I was thinking that as well, that I don't see a universal reaction, that I see it more as either a personal or an embedded sociocultural type of reaction, that it depends on who you talk to, that the reactions might be different, that for whatever your background is. For instance, when I was at the Motor Museum last week, I didn't have a reaction with the fetuses or with the broken baby skull or with the different body parts that were sitting there in a way that was at a personal level. And I thought I had a chance to go to Body Worlds, but it was actually Bodies, an exhibition in South Street Seaport, that I decided not to go. But that was because there were questions about where did the bodies come from? Were they from Chinese prisoners? Mm-hmm. And so I decided not to go when other friends were going. But I looked online to find out about it, and I thought, oh, that would be kind of neat to see. I thought it was weird that they were put in the different positions, but I did think about that about not, I don't think I necessarily named it as dignity, but I didn't necessarily see an issue if the bodies were freely given afterwards, after death, mm-hmm. to do what they want. But I see it more as, I'm still confused with the ownership thing, because I see it more that they're setting it up as an artistic type thing, and it's almost like it looks like an artistic exhibition, like how somebody would make sculptures out of stone and then put those
up. And beautifully light them.
And beautifully light them and then sign the bottom or something like that. And then people would go and look at them, and there could be an educational component if they wanted to throw that in there. But it still looks to me more like art, especially putting them on the horse, one holding like the brain and then the heart. And whether or not he owns them, he won't own them forever, just like the Mona Lisa is not owned forever. It's sitting in a museum and thousands of people look at it every single day. And it's on exhibition.
It sort of relates to, he had to leave anyway. We haven't defended him completely. is this question of, you were talking about the treatment of these bodies, and that's what it's like, treatment of what? How are we making an attribution of what that is? Where does the value of what these bones and tissues are, where does that come from? And I think there's multiple answers. So I'm just sort of, we can strengthen our arguments wherever they lie. If we can take a step back and say, you know, this is what I believe this thing is. Here's why I believe that a dead body is what it is. And that is informing my ethical analysis. It's the same way, I'm probably going to get this wrong, but the way we, and it does have to do back with this, and we'll get there eventually, I promise, the body, the body and the person. Back in sort of medieval times, when the body and the person were so intimately tied, capital punishment often required beatings post-death, dismemberment post-death, as part of the punishment. Because the person and the body were like that. Now, you know, we do lethal injections. You know, we bury Osama bin Laden at sea. You know, there's a different, there's a distinction made now between body and person, which for some people, in some traditions, and it's more intimately tied in other people in other traditions. Most of those, I think, boil down to, sort of by necessity, to religious questions, because scientifically we can't know what happens after you die. So where do we find those answers? We find those in either spirituality or, you could be like my mother, who just literally believes that you become a pile of dirt and you disintegrate, and she could care less and wants us to care less. Yes.
I think that's exactly what bothers me. The total separation between the person and the body that makes that body art, not the person anymore. Mm-hmm. For me, with my cultural, religious, autobiographic context, is hard to make. Mm-hmm. And it's something I do not want to make that step, because I cannot see how a person, even for the sake, it's not really for the sake of science purely, it's also for the sake of art and entertainment.
And commerce.
Yes.
You keep forgetting commerce, and I keep coming back to it. I guess I'm more of a Marxist than you are.
I think commerce is like, is, if you cannot argue for art, you definitely cannot argue for commerce.
Okay, I'm going to think about that. Keep going, but go back to your main point. So for you, that separation is problematic.
I don't think it's ethical to make that total separation and make that body not a person anymore and just an art, just an artifact, culturally artifact. Mm-hmm. For me, it's not something my definitely personal identity, it's not an ethical step to make.
And I knew that's what you were saying, but I needed you to say it. Because otherwise, we become just like a lot of the bioethicists that I criticized at the beginning of this semester, pronouncements from on high about the inherent dignity of the human body. If I'm going to hold on to my culturally relativist perspective, I cannot argue for an inherent dignity of the human body that is universal to everybody. I can't do it. It doesn't fit with my orientation to the world. I can value and agree that it's undignified. Where I come at it is probably from a different direction. Because I'm a complete agnostic who chose the name Alejandro because I liked it. You know, I mean, it's just, it's how we view the world. So I can critique body worlds because of what it means to me, again, about the commercialism of human bodies. I don't have a problem with the manipulation of the dead bodies into an artistic form. That's why I signed sort of both the dignity article from the philosopher and SS's piece, which obviously resonates more with me, because it's a more socially embedded critique of what's happening. Both are valid. I just think it's super important that we state where we're coming from when we make these arguments.
But an anthropological joke, I can assume that I'm talking from the place I'm talking, mm-hmm. for my identity. It's like, for me, if we're talking about human dignity and death, for me, I still don't understand the viewing process after death, because for me it's so different from how we bury, mm-hmm. and how we relate to burying the body, which should be as immediate as possible. So I definitely assume that I'm talking from a very mm-hmm. specific case. And
sure.
By the way, when you say SS, I hear the stuff.
Oh, sorry.
That's an anthropological case.
Speaking of, I don't know if this is relevant at all, but just trying to find out about this guy and his doctorate. His mm-hmm. father was a cook, was a German SS cook.
Oh dear. I know, it's like he had to be German, didn't he? He just had, yeah. It's like, oh please,
and
why?
He became a hemophiliac and cut himself and spent 6 months in the hospital as a kid. Mm-hmm. And then he escaped into West Germany in 1970 and got his doctorate in 75 from the University of Heidelberg and then worked there in the Institutes of Anatomy and Pathology for 22 years. That's his.
Von Hagens did get a doctorate?
Yeah. And
in what?
Yeah, this is not Wikipedia. It's a website. It's a biography of this guy. Mm. So I just kind of interested.
Yeah.
But so much of it really is tied to religion and culture. You know, I mm-hmm. think of some of the, you know, from the Judeo-Christian thing of Israel carrying the bones of Joseph. Through their, you know, his body was so important to them in their in the view and picture of what that means. And that's tied to the concept of resurrection and all of these things mm-hmm. that you know through the captivity in Egypt and then back through the wilderness and then actually to there's so much that's there. And there's an excellent book that I want to recommend at the end of the class. Hasn't really nothing to do with the class, but it's a book called Peace Child, and it's about the first missionaries who go into Papua New Guinea, into that area, and the clashing of the cultures. Mm. And there's a couple really interesting accounts of what they do with the bodies of the dead, and what you do with the bodies of your dead friends and the bodies of your dead enemies, and how that's done. And they literally become living memorials and displays in the middle of a village, and the body of the from an opposing village who's killed, their bodies are meant to be regularly desecrated by the victor's village, just as an ongoing assault. So how they embody that?
That's why they instituted cricket. Cricket is very popular, the game, in Papua New Guinea and other parts of the world that were colonized in that way, that had sort of tribal violence. It was that it's now in a game. Mm-hmm. So they march out in their sort of war costumes. It's fascinating. All right, what time is it? We have 5 more minutes. We're going to need to pick this up next week. Let me show you sort of where I wanted to go. And you can look, you can watch. It's a 10-minute. He did a public autopsy in England in a British art gallery. 450 people paid $19. And it was aired on television. That's where we have the naked guy. Because what they do is kind of cool, because he'll show like a flexing bicep, you know, and then they'll like rip the skin off the guy's arm and show the bicep, and like pull out the bicep muscle. This idea of sort of a more social bioethics. Back to the ethics of ocularity, the appropriateness of looking, the question of not only why we look, but to add to what we just talked about, what are we looking at? Analyze our responses, look through them. And then I was sort of switching to this idea that I love this poster. It's Barbara Kruger. It says, "Your gaze hits the side of my face." The act of looking can be benign or malignant, but it can never be passive. Your gaze hits the side of my face, it alters me. And it's a sort of marble statue, but it looks like she's actually been bruised. So there's gender, there's power, there's vision. She's a fascinating artist. So adding answers from today, or new questions from today, when we were talking about the dialogue between viewers and viewed, the interpretive subject of a body, alive or not. Yes. Modernity. Here we go. Berlin, the body and the person. He talks about the idea that depersoned bodies relate to the medicalization of anatomy and the distinction between the corpse that is mourned and the specimen that is studied, or in von Hagens's case, the specimen that is viewed aesthetically. Here's the story. It was the story of a body and a person reflected each other. Modern, he calls it low culture, but he doesn't. It's a common term in sort of art history and anthropology and sociology. It doesn't mean, don't take it derogatorily. Where a person manipulates their body as a template for expression. So the story of the body and the story of the person reflect each other sort of through the conscious actions of people, like tattoos and body piercings and that sort of thing. Whereas he talks about modern high culture, with there's still manipulation, but it's manipulation that's not designed to be seen. It's good facelifts, it's good boob jobs, this, you know, it's chemical peels, it's that kind of thing. And the story of the body and the story of the person are kept separate. And that's where medical ethics lives. I will provide a link for the Visible Human Project. You should definitely look into that. It's the perfect example of a complete separation between body and person. It's an NIH endeavor. The plastinated sort of slices, they're slices of two people. An executed prisoner who donated his body, we're talking about informed consent issues, and an anonymous woman. And in the same way as like the Human Genome Project, where people are like, whose genome is this? Sort of like, whose woman is this? She's post-reproductive reproductive age. He's got a whole bunch of medical conditions, yet they're sort of put out there visually as, you know, sort of ideal specimens or the norm. So we need to think about an ethics of anatomy, because anatomy and pathology are branches of medicine, and the norms of anatomy and pathology bear directly on medical education and medical practice. So thinking about how non-living bodies are looked at and used directly relates to how living bodies are treated. So that's sort of an interesting thought experiment too. Sort of, if we buy this argument, to think about norms and values that we apply to deceased specimens versus norms and values we apply to living patients. What framework we're using, how we're making judgments. Talked about the visual needs to take a greater role, and this is sort of the big oomph in a class taught by a visual anthropologist in a bioethics setting. Theories of morals are based on human reactions to the sight of suffering. The body is key. The body is the locus of disease and the locus of healthcare delivery. But it is ignored as a thing. And again, I'm not saying we have to think of it as a particular thing, but the physical substance of the body has to be paid attention to. We need to start reconciling the body and the person. It says on page 202, sort of, what is needed is a revised ethos of human diversity, an ethos that takes into account the dialectics of body, self, and society. He calls it body, self. That's not a typo. It's not body, comma, self, comma, and society. It's body, self, and society. An ethos that addresses medical needs without the stigmatization of the abnormal. So, where we're going next week and how we can tie the remainder of this week into next week is there's three articles for next week. Why the way we consider the body matters. Again, not saying there's a particular way to consider the body. It's not sort of, you can be more ethical if you think through a religious perspective, or you could think more ethically if you think through a social constructions perspective. Not that. Just the way that we consider the body matters. The sort of the fact that we need to be considering the body from different perspectives. And how, again, thinking about the body and the embodied body selves can, as I've said, sort of enliven bioethics. I know that seems like a cliche, but I love that expression because it points to everything that I think it needs to do. Enlivens. It gives life and bodies to the cases that we talk about, to the patients that we're treating, to the dilemmas that we're contemplating, and the normative values that we're pronouncing, or normative judgments. So think about von Hagens and the Mutter not just as sort of aberrant exhibitions that are like a Barnum Freak Show, which are going to come and go. Think of all the ways that the authors have talked about and analyzed Barnum and Freak Shows as a particular moment in our history, in terms of a particular way in which we have dealt with difference and dealt with other people, which will get to the value, which will get to your values of the body and the person. Try to take all of those ways of analyzing the past based on how we used to treat the body, the theories, and everything sort of made sense when we talked about it in the past. Lift that analytical framework up and bring it to the present and see what happens. It's kind of a fun way to think. All right. And it is 6:30. It's a beautiful evening, I think, or although it's cold and rainy. I'm not sure. But it's late. See you next week. Oh, we're having pizza.